All right, welcome back to the Pat's Pines Podcast.
Episode 2.
We're very happy to have Walt Keyes, creative director from Land Grant Brewing. Land Grant and Walt won an award recently, did they not, Mark?
That's right. I'm pleased to say that Land Grant Brewing is a 2016 Ohio-made honoree being awarded the Outstanding Ohio Brand Award.
Yeah.
The first ever Ohio-made awards will celebrate Ohio makers, business owners, food artisans, inventors, and entrepreneurs. This particular award recognizes an Ohio company for their achievement in branding, marketing, and the attention to detail of their product line.
I think if you read about new craft breweries starting up, they know how to make beer, but that's sometimes kind of a forgotten element, and it's pretty damn important when you get right down to it. Probably also time to thank our guests from last month, Fred Lee and Jonathan Carroll from Actual,
for being
the guinea pigs for us, right?
Yeah, and we had a great time at the Sourpuss bottle release party that followed the taping.
It was a clinic for how to do a bottle release, I would say.
Yeah, they did a great job. Very well organized.
Yeah, you got in line, you got a number. So you could get your bottles, then you go in, you could order the beer. They opened up the brewery. Yeah, it was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And the beer was good too. I want to tell everyone, if you're interested, that I recently did post a review of Tenacity, the Brett beer. And since we're now into 2016, I want to just give a little plug for my Central Ohio Beers of the Year. So head on over to the blog if you want to see those.
Nice reviews on those, Pat.
Thank you, Mark. Any news, goings on that you've heard on the grapevine? What's going on down in the world of Central Ohio beer?
Oh, well, I know Hoofhearted's, did I say that right? Hoofhearted? I know that Hoofhearted's tap room is soon to be opening in Italian Village.
It's getting pretty close. I know that I saw just last week on Facebook, they brewed their first batch, Tub Life, yep, down there. I spoke to Trevor the Sunday after Christmas, and he said probably about 5 weeks is when they were looking to open. And so that's very close to the end of January. Before we get to the guest, we have one more feature we'd like to do. That is the Drink Local.
And Drink Often.
All right. That's events going down in the month of January in Central Ohio. A Beer 101 class at Lineage Brewing on Sunday, January 17th. Mike Byrne down there is going to do a class on the basics of craft beer.
Also, Lineage has started Beer Film Tuesdays.
Yeah.
The next one is on the 26th and will feature a viewing of the Michigan Beer Film.
On Saturday, January 23rd, there's a big bottle release at Wolf's Ridge, and they're celebrating the one-year anniversary of the tap room. And the bottle release is going to be various barrel-aged versions of their award-winning Direwolf Imperial Stout.
Wow, Pat, that is going to be one busy day. That same day, Size White Brewing and Zauber Brewing are having anniversary parties as well. We'll have to make it out to a couple of those.
All right. What else do we have going on in January, Mark?
Matry's Winter Bonanza.
Oh, yeah.
That's January 30th on a Saturday. That's a good afternoon. We went out last year. There's a lot of really interesting stuff, not only provided by their brewery, but brought out from other breweries that they'll release on a schedule throughout the course of the day. A lot of releases.
Yeah. It's really like a mini beer festival, isn't it?
You know what it is, Pat? It's like a mini beer fest.
I mean, we went last year, didn't we? With Johnny.
True.
And wow, we had a great time down there. So if you had never been down to Madtree, this would be a good time to go. I won't say how that day finished, but...
Yeah. Oh, sure. Looking ahead to February, it is worth mentioning that the High Gravity Hullabaloo is coming up on the 6th.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Should be good.
And I think it's pertinent to mention it now because that's a popular event, and we waited until the February show to tell you about it. There may be no tickets left. So next month, the February show, we're going to be talking about High Gravity beers. We're going to have the guys from Zaftig and also from the Columbus Craft Beer Alliance in to talk High Gravity beers. So that's not in this month, but come back next month for that one. Welcome to the part of the show that's actually worth listening to. That's when we have a guest on. And this month, we're talking about branding and marketing. And we're lucky to be joined by one of the best in that, Walt Keyes, co-owner and creative director at Land Grant Brewing. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I mean, I guess my first question for you, Walt, is if I was advising my son and said he wanted to be the creative director for a brewery, you know, what would be the path to get there? How did you get to this point in your life?
I would say
go to a state university, get yourself an English degree, move to New York, get fired from a publishing company, and come back to Ohio. Well, my professional background is in graphic design and photography, English major at Ohio State, and one of my good friends and roommates from Ohio State got super into homebrewing.
You're talking about Adam.
Adam, co-owner of Land Grant, business-minded guy, got super into homebrewing, so that became him his hobby, and sort of my after-hours hobby became designing labels and websites and whatever for his homebrew.
Was it a big leap to say, hey, I'm going to, you know, go jump into this brewery? Because it's a big investment.
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah. So prior to working at the brewery, I worked for a couple of design agencies down in Cincinnati, and we decided to make a run at the brewery thing in a real way, and we did a Kickstarter campaign, which succeeded, and that was sort of our litmus test of saying, you know, sort of proof of concept, like, this isn't the worst idea in the world, and you know, we went to our wives and we're like, hey, we're like, really going to do this, or we're going to quit our jobs and start a brewery. Look, all these people think it's a good idea too. So once we did that, I mean, we literally, you know, quit our jobs and moved to Columbus to do this. And so, yeah, it was a huge leap.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, you're jumping off a cliff at that point. Luckily as a designer, it's an industry where I'm able to work sort of independently. So I was able to do freelance stuff in the meantime, but was very much doing Land Grant full time for a good year and a half before we opened the doors.
Wow. Because you guys had a very long gestation period, right?
Yeah, yeah. It took us a long time to find a building. And then after we found the building, a good 6-8 months of construction and all that fun stuff. Yeah, so it was a huge leap. I mean, we totally went all in on it with no real safety net. I mean, it doesn't work out. You can go find other jobs, but we went totally in, and it's obviously, at least so far, worked out pretty well for us. And
you guys have had a fantastic first year.
Yeah. Right? I think so. And I think our first year has gone sort of better than we ever, you know, we tried to plan everything conservatively, and I think everything went better than we ever really could have hoped for.
Now, the sports theme, was that there from the very beginning? How did that come into being?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Adam and I both being Ohio State alumni and doing this here in Columbus and both being sort of, you know, sports fans, kind of developed very early on in the process of developing a brand and a name. And we wanted to reference those things, but in a way that didn't turn people off. So the Land Grant name, referencing the Land Grant Act, it's a nod to sort of our alma mater and sort of college sports in general. A lot of the beers have sort of sports themed names. They don't all. We wanted to reference those things without being too in your face. I have a biased opinion, but I think we've sort of achieved that, both with the brand and the tap room.
One of the best features about the show is we drink beer while we're doing the show, and we should get into some beer.
Oh,
here,
we
right?
should definitely have some beer.
So,
getting a little thirsty.
Yeah, so what are we, we're going to start with a holiday seasonal from Land Grant, right? The beer crumbs. So
this is our oatmeal raisin stout.
Cheers. All right, gentlemen, why don't you walk us through this beer a little bit.
Chatted with our brewer, Jamie. We do 15 pounds of caramelized raisin for a 20-barrel batch of beer. And those are added both in the boil and during fermentation. So basically dry hop it with caramelized raisins.
Okay.
And it smells really good in the brewery when he's cooking, though, by the way.
You know, it's reminiscent of a chocolate oatmeal raisin cookie, which I suppose is, hence the beard crumbs, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, we get the question all the time. Half the people that order it call it bread crumb, which it's a two-letter, you know, switch. So it's not a far departure, so. You know, last sort of holiday season, we were kicking around, you know, like, you know, what's our holiday beer going to be? And I think we all kind of knew and agreed that we didn't want to do a big
ginger,
cinnamon, honey, nutmeg, whatever, spiced beer. Plenty of those out there. Some of them are good, some of them are not. Everyone at the brewery, you know, more or less had their fill of those beers over the past few years. So we wanted to kind of take it a different route. So we wanted something a little more subtle. You know, when you start talking about the holidays, you know, cookies come up, you know, relatively quickly, you know, holiday cookies, and the idea of an oatmeal raisin cookie, it's not a super sweet treat. It's a little more subtle. You know, it's not like a big chocolate chip, double fudge, whatever. It's, you know, a little more subtle on its sweetness.
And not a snickerdoodle.
Yeah. And so, you know, we you know, and obviously oatmeal stouts are a great wintertime beer. And so, you know, oatmeal raisin stout kind of came about that way. You know, the name for the style came about before anything else, and did a pilot batch, turned out really nicely. We're all pretty excited about it. So, you know, and then the name comes in and we're thinking cookies, we're thinking Santa. So the idea is, you know, a nice crumbly oatmeal raisin cookie, and the crumbs, you know, fall into Santa's beard, and beard crumbs was named, and it was sufficiently weird, slightly off-putting, I guess, but I think it fit us well. We, like most breweries in America, most of us have beards, so I think it fit our personality pretty well. And
I can attest that both of you have ample yeah. beards.
Though, ironically, our head brewer, Jamie, does not have a beard.
Occasionally some stubble.
He rails against
the stereotype of the bearded brewer.
Exactly.
Yep, okay. Yep.
Exactly.
Now, do the raisins come from the Greek island of Cyprus or anything? Or is there anything special about the raisins?
They're California raisins. Famous
made
band.
In the good old USA.
Heard it through the grapevine. California raisins that we caramelize and drop them in there. And they add a nice little touch of sweetness. But again, pretty subtle. You know, it's not going to overwhelm you with sweetness or anything like that. And that's kind of what we're going for. Nice, warm sort of holiday beer without too much in your face.
You know, a lot of beers, you get the aroma more as the beer warms up. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like once you get to the bottom of the glass, it really shines through, too.
It evokes the holiday spirit nicely, I think. And if you're a raisin lover, you're going to like this beer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because the raisins don't overpower it, but they definitely come through. One more question about the beer crumbs. For people who had it last year and haven't tried it this year, it's tweaked a little bit. How much has it changed from last year?
It's definitely stronger.
It's bigger.
It's up about 1% from last year. It's 7.3 this year. Yes, last year was like 6.1, 6.2.
More befitting of a holiday party.
Yeah. And that's something that we definitely want it to be sort of a heartier, you know, warm holiday kind of a flavor and have some of that nice alcohol warmth to it. So definitely it's a little bit bigger than last year. We definitely upped the raisin this year from last year.
I think it's definitely.
Well, and that's what we want to do. I mean, you know, it's as a small brewery, you know, you don't want to just get stuck on a recipe. You want everything to get better from year to year. I mean, and from batch to batch, for that matter. I mean, our core beers are pretty much locked in at this point, but seasonals and stuff like that, where, you know, there's no reason not to make it better. Settle.
It's a bit boring if everyone's making the 1992 recipes still, you know, so. I'm really not a brewer, but I did mess around and brewed a beer at North Hyde recently, Black IPA. I'm like, all right, I'm going to name this beer. I always thought that wouldn't be that hard. Pretty hard, actually.
Yeah,
there's a lot of names. There are a lot of names taken. Kind of walk me through one of the beers at Landgrand and say, how did this happen? Do you ever say, I've got a great name. Can you brew a beer to match this name? Or does the beer always come first? So all those steps that go from the birth of the beer to when I see it on the shelf.
I think there's no like exact science to it, obviously.
Different every time, I guess.
Yeah. And sometimes the name comes first. And Adam and I have names that we've had in our pocket for years and we're just waiting for the right beer. And then vice versa, you know, you brew a beer and it's like, oh shit, we need a name for this thing. You know, it's going to be done in a week. What are we going to do?
Can you give me an example of a beer that you had a name and then the beer came
I would say, you know, Greenskeeper, our session IPA, was one. And actually had a couple iterations of names. We wanted to do a session. Adam's a big golfer. I play golf every now and then, but I'm terrible. We both enjoy...
We should golf sometime.
Yeah. you want to join?
Yeah, I haven't golfed in a long time.
We can donate some balls to the Woods of Ohio. That was a name where, like, we knew we wanted to do a sessionable beer, sort of a lighter, a beer that you could drink while golfing, spending time outside. Its original name was Back Nine, which played into golf. Turns out that trademark was taken, so we kind of went back to the drawing board and threw around names and settled on Greenskeeper, which was actually my wife came up with the name Greenskeeper.
Okay.
Because we were sitting at a restaurant in South Carolina, and, like, Adam had texted me, he's like, oh, shoot, you know, the green Back Nine, we can't use Back Nine, whatever. I was sitting with my wife and my cousins in South Carolina having dinner, and I was like, oh, shoot, you know, we can't use this name, whatever. Like, you know, we're sitting here, let's spitball, you know, like, see if we come up with something similar. And we came up with the name Greenskeeper. My wife was the one who threw it out. That was one we're like, okay, perfect. That's a great name. Not taken. We knew we wanted it to be a sessionable beer, and, you know, we thought it was probably going to be a session IPA, which it ended up being. And it was one that we reworked quite a few times before we really, I think, settled on a recipe. But it was definitely one where the name came first and the beer and maybe the style came second. We did a beer called Screwball Midsummer Wheat.
Mm. Yes.
Which was a nice, it was a wheat beer with Sriracha Ace hops.
Yeah, American wheat.
Yeah, it was good. It came out in the middle of summer. It was one of those things, it was like, oh man, this beer's going to be done in like a week and we don't have a name. And we're looking at the calendar and looking outside and, you know, we had like a wiffle ball, you know, sitting there. And we're like, oh man, we should give this thing a wiffle ball name. It's the perfect time to go outside and play wiffle ball. So we ended up coming with Screwball. I mean, I probably did the illustration and the name for that, you know, like 4 days before the beer was kegged, you know. So sometimes it comes down like right to the last minute.
Yeah.
Because part of it, you know, and part of it is, you know, it's you don't necessarily want to name a beer before you taste it. But I mean, when you're drinking, you know, halfway fermented, uncarbonated beer, you're not really getting the full experience, you know. So ideally, you know, you wait till the beer's done, then you give it a name and all that. But the reality is you got to get things printed and in place for launch. And, you know, especially when it's like a dry hop beer or something, you know, the second it's done, the clock's ticking.
Yeah, yeah,
you don't want to get it out on tap or on the shelf or whatever as soon as you can, because a couple months or whatever, you're going to lose that aroma. So you want to get it out ASAP, but so you don't necessarily have time to wait.
So when you want to see if a name has been taken, do you just go to Rate Beer and Beer Advocate? Or what do you do to find out if someone's already taken the beer? And what if somebody like a small brewery in Vancouver has a beer by that name? Is that sort of now off the charts, or what do you do?
I mean, for us, I mean, we try to keep everything on the level. We usually start with Untappd just because that seems to be a pretty easily searchable database of beer. It'll put homebrew in there and stuff. A lot of the times you'll look up and maybe a homebrew has used a similar name or something.
So there's a homebrew.
But homebrew is now, I mean, sometimes homebrew setups, they've got a professional looking website and all this stuff. And you can't tell if it's a homebrew or a legit brewery. Yeah. It's tough to tell.
Yeah.
If you're going to trademark the beer, you got to search for wine and liquor as well. Just because the trademark bureau sees that as too similar of an industry. Trademarks are a tricky thing. If someone uses it and you don't defend it, then you lose your trademark.
At some point, that becomes more recognizable.
Yeah, and I mean, you want to ideally work everything out amicably. We legally have to make them stop. Otherwise, we forfeit our claim to it.
Right.
So you don't want to be a bully, and you don't want to have to go down that road. But you do if you want to, you know, retain your trademark rights. Luckily, we haven't had any issues, but we've only been up in a year. So maybe at some point we will. Hopefully we don't.
You know, it's time to drink another beer. That is the Blackout Stout. I've got two versions. I've got this one. I brought a new one, and Great Lakes has recently went through a rebranding, so I thought, let's drink their stout. While we're getting into this, did you guys see all the stuff about the controversy with Great Lakes and their Christmas ale barrel-aged souring unintentionally?
No.
That was a big
unintentional
deal.
Unintentional souring.
So apparently they barrel-aged the Christmas ale every year. And there's a big release of it. And they did that this year. And then, like, something came out, like, 2 days before the release. And it's like, oh, happy accident. It's actually sour this year. Not everyone was appreciative of them releasing an accidentally sour beer. And so there was a bit of a backlash. And then the day of the release, they were like, all right, we're not releasing this at all. But I guess people come from all over for that.
Interesting.
So, anyway. Yeah. Well, cheers.
Smells pretty good.
Smells nice.
Thank you, friend.
Mm-hmm. Nice and roasty.
A lot of roast malt there. Not extremely hoppy, but like balanced out.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely malt is forefront.
9%. There was a big blackout in 2003 where most of the East Coast lost power.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess they were...
I guess Cleveland probably...
Cleveland was hit pretty hard. Well, of course, Cleveland hardly has electricity in good days. Right? So yeah, Cleveland lost power. And they were working on a stout at that time, I think. And so... Well, I made that little bit of that last part up, so, but I think it is definitely after that blackout of Cleveland in 2003.
I think embellishment is the best part of every story.
Hyperbole.
My wife would tell you the same thing. Man, for a 9% beer, you don't think alcohol when you're drinking smooth, this.
And it's not overly, sometimes roasty beers are a little astringent almost because there's so much roast. Bitter, I guess would be the right word. My father-in-law is like, don't give me one of those dark, bitter beers, you know? And that means any beer that's dark-colored, right? You know, but because...
They're all the same. Yeah.
but it is true that sometimes stouts can be a little
bit... Yeah, and there should be some of that burnt malt character.
That's expected.
You don't want it to be too acrid.
So let's talk a little bit about the Great Lakes rebranding.
Yep.
Right? So what was it? Maybe about a year ago that they did this rebranding? I think... Anyway...
I don't even think quite a year.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think they technically did it probably about a year ago. And I think, obviously, like, they've got a lot of product out there, so to see a good amount of time.
First time I was made aware of it was when Rick Arman's article came across on it.
So what's your professional opinion then on this rebranding?
So in my semi-professional opinion, I think it's a very well-executed sort of evolution of their brand and design. Obviously, I mean, Great Lakes has been around for a while now. And they've established quite a bit of brand equity in Ohio and beyond. So anytime, you know, a company like that makes a change, it's gonna, you know, you're gonna get backlash. Change is hard for a lot of people. But I think they took their labels and streamlined them and took the design that they had and sort of just elevated it a little bit. You know, the logo itself, they've really streamlined that, and especially sort of their crest. It was very busy at first. And very in line with, you know, the sort of craft brewing sort of design aesthetic from the you know, from the 90s.
From the millennium. Yeah,
yeah, from the 90s and 80s. And yeah. At that time, I mean, it was very appropriate. It's gotten a little dated. What they've done is they've kept the spirit and the overall look and feel and of the brand and the labels, specifically the bottle labels is really what I'm kind of talking about. It, you know, they've taken those sort of painting, sort of very detailed old world paintings
like the labels. Like a Dutch master.
Yeah, thing, exactly.
You know, very, very dark, you know, like a Rembrandt without the light.
And they've updated them nicely in a way that I think makes a lot more sense for packaging.
I mean, even though it's cleaned up, it's modernized.
Yeah.
There's no loss of identity where you're like, wow, this doesn't even look like the beer.
Right, yeah. I mean, you see these new bottles on the shelf, you know, from a distance. You see the old ones and immediately know it's Great Lakes. You know it's the same brand and everything.
Let's look at a couple of other examples of breweries that have rebranded. One of the more dramatic ones, I would say, is Trogues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very recent thing, actually. But what do you think of the Trogues rebrand?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very much in line with what Great Lakes did. And I think that will kind of ring true for a lot of these brands we look at. They took a little bit of, you know, an iconic sort of look and feel and brand and just sort of cut it down to what was essential.
They simplified it, didn't they?
Right. I mean, the old Trogues sort of crest and seal, there's a lot going on.
You know, hop leaves, and you've got
four different sizes of typography, you know, a lot of serifs and detailed illustrations, and the whole thing just kind of gets in its own way. Whereas the new one's really cut down. It's got the sort of guitar pick.
It looks like a guitar pick, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's intentional or not, but it's a nice shape, and it cuts to what's important, and it's the name Trogues. Mm. And then with the, you know, the labels, same thing. They've just cut out all the bullshit and gotten straight to, you know, what needs to be on there. And
yeah, it's good. It's really good, I think. Yeah.
Now, I think the guitar pick also, Brothers in Metal, always love
that. That. Oh, yeah.
Before we get through this rebranding segment, we want to drink the older vintage, the 2013 vintage of Blackout South that's been sitting in my cellar, a.k.a. basement, for the last 2 years. So let's see if it's different.
It actually, yeah, it is. I wish we would have had them side by side. That's really
It's a lot more fragrant.
Like. Yeah.
You get a bit more sherry, a little bit. It's a little bit more.
Definitely some yeast autolysis to the point that you've got some.
That umami, savory, tending towards soy a little bit. There's a little bit of that. I mean, it's in the background.
Even a little black licorice, teeny bit in the background.
Yeah.
Molasses. I always love a high alcohol dark beer aged.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, this is the way they tend to go, doesn't it? They tend to go toward this very savory soy.
That's good. It's really good.
Yeah. So do you guys have a preference?
As good as we kind of enjoyed between the roasty, chalky stout, all the edges are gone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's about as round as a beer gets.
It's rounded.
I'm glad you saved this for a while.
Yeah. It's very different. And I think rounded is a good word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the savory, umami kind of characteristics come out. Right. So let's talk some more about other breweries that have rebranded. One of the biggest craft breweries rebranded not too long ago, which is New Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the New Belgium rebranding? Well,
yeah, and so for me, you know, when I look at these and we talk about it, you know, you can look at a lot of the big sort of beer rebrandings that have happened in the last 2-3 years, and it's easy to make the connection that they've all, at least the good ones, they've all kind of...
They've simplified, haven't they?
Yeah, they've simplified, and at the same time, they've sort of developed a cohesiveness. And especially, you know, with like New Belgium, Green Flash, Ballast Point, sort of name a couple, you can look at their old branding... And you can see that it's not really, you know, you look at Fat Tire and then you look at sort of Ranger, they're completely different.
Yeah.
There's no cohesive
language. No coherence
language
at all, is there?
And so I think what they've done, and if you've been to, you know, a beer shop and you've seen, you know, multiple New Belgium products on a shelf, you can see it. I mean, they all, you know, they're all different colors. They have different illustrations, but you see them on the shelf and you know these are all New Belgium beers and they all fit together and they all have this sort of cohesive visual language that they've achieved. And I think it's fantastic. I mean, and that's something at Landgrant we try to do is try and give each beer its own personality that fits within this sort of system of design. And each beer has its own illustration, its own color, this and that, but everything fits within this sort of system and template.
Yeah.
That says Landgrant. And so you know, like,
immediately you say, there we go, that's Landgrant.
I think that's what, you know, New Belgium has done just an incredible job of. I mean, the illustrations are beautiful. They communicate the sort of the feel and style of beer extremely well. Colors are extremely appropriate. And like I said, like, they all fit together. you want people to drink your beer and you want people to pick it out, but they want, you want them to take away that sort of brand awareness at the end of the day. And
if you think about the early craft breweries, I mean, and some of the ones that have been very successful did that very well. I mean,
yeah.
If you think about Stone, if you think about Rogue, those beers were immediately recognizable.
You know, forever it was like, you had to have like hops on your label and you had to have, you know, the barley to sort of emphasize that, you know, it's beer and it's, you know, made with, you know, care and all that. And now it's the
craft rice, right? Nobody used rice on their label.
No, yeah, you don't see that. They leave that out. Yeah. And then, I think the craft beer market has become the way that it is. Yeah. It's so much more crowded. There's so many breweries with so many different personalities.
Yeah.
And it's how you stand out.
It's just expected that it's going to have quality ingredients now.
Right.
So you have to do something more than that.
If I looked at the old Fat Tire label and I looked at the Ranger label, I would assume that it was made by two different breweries.
Yeah.
What you see with these breweries streamlining, and they're creating sort of a cohesive language.
If you have, you know, crappy beer inside the can or the bottle, then that's going to reflect on the branding. People are going to feel like they got tricked into buying this beer, right?
It's kind of a hollow experience. Right, right. I mean, and I feel like
we could name some.
Oh yeah, anyone that's gone to the store and picked out a beer, you know, wine or whatever based on the labeling and had a crappy beer, it's a really disappointing experience.
Yeah.
One brewery in my head, I'm not going to name their name, but I've seen them on the shelf several times and they've gotten me multiple times. I'm like, oh, this is such a sweet looking bottle. I'm going to give them another chance. And it's just, the beer is terrible. And it's a really sort of deflating experience, you know, because you want the full package. And, you know, generally when you look at a brewery or company, really any company, you know, if they take the time and the effort to sort of put consideration and, you know, thought into everything, odds are the product's pretty good too. Because, I mean, I know at Landgrant, I mean, we've built a nice brand and we've got, you know, we put a lot of thought and consideration into everything. From a branding standpoint, and beyond that, we put twice as much effort and, you know, care into the beer we make.
Talk to me about fonts, because that's an important thing in the label. What do you like? What do you not like? What is a Landgrant font?
You know, your typeface is going to sort of lay the groundwork for the sort of the messaging you're pushing.
Right away, it implies an aesthetic.
Sure. And I mean, in the 90s, you've seen a lot of serif fonts, a lot of, you know, skinny letters and fancy seeming fonts, and it's got the hooks on the end and stuff like that. It's not sort of a sort of strong modern font, which would be your sans serif, but, you know, I think people for a while, and especially in the 90s, looked at that as sort of the height of sophistication, very much like, you know, we were talking about Great Lakes, like the Great Lakes font, which they still incorporate, has the skinny letter with a nice serif that I think at the time sort of, you know, exuded, you know, class and sophistication, which now it just kind of seems dated.
Yeah,
90s. Mm-hmm. And they, for the most part, much better represent sort of a modern take on things. And, you know, at Landgrant, we use a font that's, or a typeface that, you know, it has that sort of collegiate feel. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a block letter with cut corners and stuff that it gives that representation of sort of an old collegiate font.
It works very well, like an old college sweatshirt where you have mine event.
Sure. And it tells a story. And then you look at, like, you know, Ballast Point, their new font, or typeface is, it's called Brothers. But it's sort of a modern take on, like, kind of a vintage font. I don't know. Sort of old world, but
it
still
looks
feels
me,
very
it almost
modern.
Has a 20s look to it.
It looks almost stencily to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. And I think for them, you know, their craft brewer out in California has been around for a while. I think it's modern, but it's a little bit classic feeling. You know, you don't feel like this is a new flash in the pan brewery. I think you see it and they're established. You know, they're not old, but they're not new either.
It worked for $1 billion.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it gets you a nice fat paycheck at the end of the day.
They cleaned up nice.
Their old one feels very much like a typeface you'd see at a restaurant, at, you know, like, you know,
like an old seafood restaurant,
like a shitty seafood restaurant in Myrtle Beach or something. Like, oh, you know, come in and try our crab special. But they've done a fantastic job. I mean, the illustrations and the paintings or whatever they are haven't really changed much from one label to the next.
Right, right.
They've just sort of updated the frame that goes around them.
It's definitely
and
better.
It makes all the difference in the world.
You have a really good consistency of brand with Landgrant. The four cores have a consistent feel. But I know working with you, you get a lot of pleasure out of some of the one-offs and some of the things where you get to do something a little out of the mold, but still you stay right within the consistency of our brand.
Yeah.
Past Pints Studio actually has
Past Pints World Headquarters.
Yeah, actually has a couple of your more fun pieces on display here in the studio. And looking at like the Totesley Oats and looking at the Black IPA from last season's.
I think that goes back to sort of, you know, what I was talking about these other brands is you develop a system for everything to fit into, and then I don't know, I think a lot of designers will tell you the same thing, is that like the real like true joy of designing is being creative within a system.
Yeah, if it's just like
if you're just dropping do whatever you want, it's like, well, I don't know.
You have to kind of
you
have to have defined parameters to work
and with. And I think that's sort of the difference between art and design is you know, a real artist doesn't need that framework or that structure. I like to work within a system, and that system sort of creates creative opportunities. And how do you work within that predefined and sort of self-imposed structure to create something cool and creative and fun that still fits within that brand or that, you know, that design requirement?
I think that in having an identity, that's very important.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that definitely a good branding stands with quality in and consistency, and definitely something that I think every single poster that you do, Walt, be it just a silly one-off for an event or something.
The Brinestone Cowboy.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. It's the dumbest name we've come up with.
It's so fun. I love that one.
The goofiest thing, but...
I have a copy of that poster at home, actually.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's a great one. But, I mean, I know that those are fun for you. I think that it definitely shows that you can stay within the box. No matter how much fun you want to have, you can keep that consistency of brand. I think that's incredibly important.
How much fun can you have inside the box? And that's the key, you know? I mean, I think that's one thing that, you know, when Adam and I started out, like, we put a huge emphasis on what is this going to look like? What's our brand going to be? And it's something he and I both, you know, talked about. And ultimately, I did the, you know, the legwork on it, and it's definitely a, you know, a collaborative thing. You want to be a control freak to a point. Like, you want to keep everything on brand and appropriate, but you don't want to get to the point where you're not accepting ideas from other people. The main creative thing behind a beer is, other than the beer itself, is the name. Especially now that we've sort of developed this sort of system of design, once I've got the name's going to look like the name's going to look like. So coming up with whatever that name is sort of the biggest creative hurdle.
Who names the beer?
And that's the thing. Anybody.
Anyway. Okay, that could come from anyone.
Yeah. I could name it. Adam can name it. Justin, who's our youngest employee and sort of, with no slight to Justin, our sort of junior employee.
Yeah.
He's named like three beers because he's just a goofy, creative guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he comes up with these names. Comes
up
and it's
fun
like,
ideas.
And it's like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, but it's so great. Like, but we have to name the beer that.
Yeah.
Screwball. He came up with Screwball. Oh, yeah. He came up with Lawn Raker.
Yeah. Oh, Lawn Raker. Yeah. That was a good one. I like that one. Yeah.
But he's just a funny, creative guy and a few great beer names. And
sometimes a great sense of humor lends to a good name.
So you never know where it's going to come from. I think Luke came up with a name or two, one of our sales guys.
Yeah.
No, Mark has never come up with a name. I refuse to give Mark any.
Except for the Judas Priest Saison series, perhaps, yes.
But that's a
thanks,
whole
Pat.
That's a Mark project.
Try to totally erase that from Land Grant history.
That's a Mark solo
it.
Project, which that trilogy has yet to be completed.
Well, I know there's been some
the
work
Ripper,
on
what's
that,
the last
but
one
we got
be?
Busy.
I don't know.
You're not going to reveal.
It's yet to be determined.
Even though, anyway, I'm not going to go into
one of our first illustrious posts on Pat's Pints was about the Judas Priest Saison series.
At this point in the program, we are down to the point where we have the top five list.
This month's top five list is our top five favorite brands or artwork of Ohio.
I'll start it. I'll kick it off. My first brewery would be Rheingeist. And actually, Rheingeist did come in runner-up in the Ohio Brand Awards, did they not?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, you guys edged them out. According to the Pat's Pines podcast. All
right. So I'm going to do mine in alphabetical order here. I'm going to start with F-Hearted because I think they have just such a unique and sort of calculated sense of humor with their branding.
It totally captures their personality.
It's perfect. You see a Hoof-Hearted can, ad, or whatever it is, and it just so perfectly encapsulates what they're all about. And the sort of illustration style and everything is just so on point. Their brand fits them like a glove.
Really like the look of Rock Mill's stuff. And Rock Mill, I really equate to the as if you were shopping for a fine wine, looking at labels.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, they totally get the point of what they're trying to do. It's like, this is a sophisticated product. Next on my list would be Seven Sun. I say Seven Sun because, first of all, with the cans, I like the swirly line kind of thing.
Like the concentric.
Yeah. You know, on the bottles, some of that art is strikingly good.
Mike Moses just did a hell of a job. Well, some of the best looking artistic labels that I saw in last year.
This is one that it's a pretty new brewery. There's not really a ton of shit out there with their branding on it yet, but kind of excited to see where it goes is Little Fish.
Yeah,
well, Athens. Yeah. I love their logo. The things I have seen, I've liked their sense of design, and they're still brand spanking new. And as they put out more product, I'm excited to see where that brand goes. So I'm confident to put them in my top five with the idea that that's a brand that's going to continue to grow, and I think we'll see good things out of them.
My next pick is Sideswipe Brewing. You know, from the fisticuffs. I mean, they have a kind of consistent theme to them, and they're artistically, you know, aesthetically pleasing. So I'm going to say Sideswipe.
Another relatively new brewery out of Cincinnati, Taft's Ale House. Very sort of hand-touched brand.
I'm not familiar with this brand.
Just check them out.
We'll do that.
I've heard a lot of good things about the brewery itself.
I haven't had that much of their beer. I know the space is incredible. It's in an old church down in Cincinnati. Yeah. The branding is amazing. Beautiful old illustrations. It's got a real, like I said, hand-touch kind of a quality to it with a historic slant. Obviously named after Taft, the president from Cincinnati, and the logo's Taft sitting in an old bathtub.
Now, was he a big beer drinker? Do you have any idea?
I don't have a...
Would you say that a heart of gold?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
I'm not a political guy, but he's from Cincinnati, so he must have had a heart of gold. But their branding is really on point. I know they're putting out cans and stuff. I don't think we can really get much of it up here in Columbus yet, but...
Yeah, new exposure for me, so that's cool.
Check them out.
All right, Mr. Richards, what's your next choice?
Mad Tree, not only love their beers, like the look of the cans. Mad Tree.
Mm-hmm. We totally agree. I mean, they have a great brand identity. When you see it, you know it. And, of course, the beer inside.
My next one is out of Dayton, Ohio, Warped Wing.
Oh, Warped Wing.
Yeah. Good choice.
Logo sharp. Really, I love the cans. They do. With the
got a lot of stuff going on.
The variations on like the whale, like and like the story behind the like a mechanical whale that can't fly. But if you put enough ingenuity into it, it can fly. Like, I love the story behind it. It's kind of weird and off the wall. The cans are just gorgeous. I mean, the illustrations and the cans are gorgeous.
I'm going to say my favorite brewery in Ohio for branding is Actual Brewery. Well, first of all, I'm a scientist, and I love the science theme. And then I just immediately recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the faceless people. You've got the animals on every one. I mean, there is a certain theme that you know it right away.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to go out on a limb. I think that's the best branding in the world.
In the whole world.
Wow. Pat, in the whole world.
That's high praise.
Yes, I could be.
Big.
Can disprove me if you want.
I'm not going to say it didn't make my top five list. I love Actual's branding. It's beautiful.
You know, no one's going to disprove anyone about that. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all subjective.
It's subjective.
I'm going with our Columbus compatriots, Wolf's Ridge. Oh, I love it. It's clean.
Like the Dire Wolf?
Yeah. That's and nice. I think for what they're doing with sort of their elevated dining experience coupled with the brewery, I think it fits them perfectly. I think it's just a very elegant and well thought out brand that fits their space perfectly.
So anyways, Walt, fantastic having you on the program. Thanks for coming on Pat's Pines. Good to be here with you, my brother.
Absolutely. Well, and Mark, both of you, it's been great having you on the show. And It's been, I would say, first of all, very informative, and second of all, because we drank so many Imperial Stouts by this point, it's been great fun.
Yeah. Shout out to Uber, who's about to get me home safe.
Thanks, Walt, again, for coming by Past Pine Studio. That's a wrap. Everybody, we'll see you next month.